Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Oui, oui. Let's take a tour through the city of art. Bah oui. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's Advanced Studio Classroom lesson. Today is June 5th, and we are exploring our travel article of the month. It is entitled Exploring the City of Art. So we are going to Paris for today and tomorrow. And to join me on this journey is Rhonda. Hi, Rhonda.
Hello, or should I say bonjour, because you started the program using your French on me there, Linda.
Actually, I don't know any French, but I can do a decent French accent. Like, I used to do that on our skits, which was fun, but I've never studied French. I would like to, because now I think it's a pleasant-sounding language. Before, I didn't really like it, but now I can appreciate it a lot more. Do you speak French?
I took French in high school. Oh. I remember the pronunciation being so hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know, compared to Chinese, the pronunciation's hard for me in Chinese, too. But it's interesting. I wonder what our listeners think about the French language, if any have studied it.
Yeah, it is quite different, because there's so many letters, sounds that you don't pronounce that are in French words. And so that's what I find confusing. Well, why do you put a T there if there's no T sound? But the thing is, French is much more consistent than English or Chinese. Well, we know English is so inconsistent. There are so many exceptions to all of the rules in English. So that's what makes it challenging. But Jayo to all of our English learners, because you are constantly learning, and that's what it's all about.
Well, and today you're going to have to try out some French, because there are a lot of French
names,
proper nouns, especially in this article. So let's give it a go.
We'll hear. Thankfully, I was not the one reading this. It was Campbell, and Campbell does a great job, because Campbell also studied French and he can speak French. So so I think he tries to get the pronunciation as accurate as possible. But we go to the city of love, the city of light, also known as Paris, right? Paris is famous for so many things.
Yes.
And art is one of them too. And we'll be exploring four museums that are located in Paris. These are four of the big ones. Three of them are along the famous Seine River, and they're pretty easy to get to. Another one is in the Montmartre district, but we will go to all of them over the next 2 days. And they have so many beautiful pieces of art, also historic artifacts to explore. So it's going to be a lot of fun going to all of these museums with you, because we actually haven't been there in real life.
I was going to say, are we going? Is this a free trip, or do I need to book a ticket? Because I don't know if it's hard to get into these museums.
Not really. I mean, it's open to the public. And I mean, the first one that we'll talk about, the biggest one, the Louvre, is the most visited museum in the world. So it's best to book a ticket online to make sure that you can get in that day, because it's no guarantee if you don't. So, you should pre-book a ticket. But this trip is free. So let us get into our article and hear the first reading now.
Exploring the City of Art, an art critic's guide to the museums of Paris. To some, Paris is the city of light. To others, it's the city of love. But to art lovers, it's simply the city of art. And there's so much to see that it's hard to know where to start. As a visual art critic and arts reporter, here's what caught my eye when I was in Paris, and what I suggest doing. The Louvre. The Louvre is one of the most famous art museums in the world. Built as a military fortress in the 13th century, it transformed into a residence for the royal family and then became a museum in 1793. The Egyptian wing is one of the largest in the world, with more than 50,000 objects. Don't miss the well-preserved mummy of Pescheri from the Ptolemaic period, 305 to 30 BC, wrapped entirely in strips of linen. In the Department of Oriental Antiquities stand between two giant Lamassu, mythological creatures from the 8th century BC. Hop over to the Denon wing and check out the French crown jewels in Galerie d'Apollon, where a crowd gathers around the glistening crown of Louis XV, covered in diamonds, rubies, emeralds, and sapphires. The 11 paintings in the gallery tell the story of the sun and Apollo, with works by 9 French artists, including Eugène Delacroix and Charles-Louis Millet. If you can stand the crowds, try to take a selfie with the Mona Lisa, who now has her own room.
Okay, thank you, Campbell, for that reading. So, we are in the City of Light. Some people know it as the City of Love, right, where lovers go. It's such a romantic city. But to art lovers, it's simply the City of Art. And that is something a main draw for me to go to Paris is just to visit all of the museums, see all of the amazing art that's there. And Paris has tons of museums and galleries. So these are just a few to get you started because you might not know where to start because, like I said, there's so many museums and galleries in the city. So this article is written by whom, Rhonda? Or what does she do?
Well, her name is Alicia Eller, and she is an arts reporter. Also, she says a visual art critic. So She writes for the newspaper Minnesota Star Tribune. It's great to get her perspective on things because she says, here's what caught my eye when I was in Paris. So she's written this rather short piece after a visit to Paris, and these are the things that she especially remembers when we say, it caught my eye, or it really caught my eye. We might have seen a lot of things, but what our attention especially goes to something, and we say, that catches my eye.
Yeah, something that grabs our attention, and that's memorable. And we get her perspective as an art critic, someone who is very knowledgeable about art. And of course, art is subjective. Not everyone has the same view, right? But she has knowledge, and she comes from an arts background. So it's good. So the first museum that we're going to is the Louvre, and it is one of the most famous art museums in the world. It was the most visited museum, or has been. It averages about 9 million visitors a year.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And look at the history of it. It was built as a military fortress, a strong building used for defense in the 13th century. That would be the 1200s, right?
Exactly.
And then it was changed into a castle, a residence for the royal family.
Yeah, it was a palace.
And it became a museum in 1793. Those are three very different things. A fort, fortress, then a castle that you live in, and now a museum.
And now a museum, yes. So it's been around for quite a while. And when it was the residence for the royal family, the royal palace, it's until 1682 when the royal family or the king decided to move the royal residence to Versailles. And we have written many articles about Versailles because it's also an amazing work of art. So besides all these functional uses or purposes for the Louvre, it's also an artwork in itself, just the building itself. And so when it became a museum in 1973, and it houses so many pieces of art. One wing is the Egyptian wing, and it's the largest in the world of Egyptian art, with more than 50,000 objects. And one fun fact about museums, like the large majority of the objects in museums are not seen. They are behind closed doors.
Right,
like they're in storage. Yes.
Yes. I noticed a phrase, the wing of a museum is a one
part.
The rectangular part usually that is not part of like the main building. Is that the way you define a wing?
Yeah, something, a part of the building. Yeah. It can be in a certain shape, but I don't think it
goes a different direction, maybe, is the idea. So the Egyptian wing is the largest in the world. So does this mean it's the largest collection of Egyptian art objects in the world? That's very interesting. I actually would have thought that would be the British Museum, which is known for its ancient objects. So this is new information for me that the Egyptian wing is one of the largest in the world with 50,000. It says don't miss the mummy, a well-preserved mummy of Pacheri from this time period.
Yes.
Called the
Ptolemaic.
Ptolemaic period. I was interested in the definition of that. It's a combination of Greek and Egyptian history. What do you know about that era?
So it was an ancient Egyptian dynasty that was founded by Ptolemy the First Soter. That's what gives its name to the that's where the Ptolemaic period gets its name. And it was one of the most powerful kingdoms that emerged after the death of Alexander the Great. So it was a prosperous period in Egyptian history. And that would explain why they probably have a lot of artifacts from that period. And so this mummy is very well preserved, and you can see it in their Egyptian wing, and it's wrapped entirely in strips of linen. And that's how they would embalm the body, the corpse, in strips of linen so that it could be preserved. Then we move on to the Department of Oriental Antiquities. Okay, so Oriental, we don't use that word that much anymore because it's not as politically correct. We say Asian, but the Orient describes the East.
The East, sure.
That includes Asia. So these are antiquities from the East. And what is an antiquity?
Sure. Antiquities are very, very old things, particularly from 3000 BC, before the birth of Christ, to what we call the Middle Ages, 500 CE, Common Era. So I looked up antiquities because when we say something is an antiquity, we're not saying it's an antique. Mm-hmm. That's something more like 100 years old. Mm-hmm. But antiquities are buildings or objects made in really ancient times.
Mm-hmm. And we can also refer to it as the time period. This is from antiquity.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah. So it can be used in those different ways. Okay. So at the entrance of this Department of Oriental Antiquities stands what? Two giant lamasa. What are these creatures?
I couldn't wait to look them up, and I saw them online. And in the museum, there are these huge bulls, male cattle, bulls with human heads and big wings. So they're carved in some kind of stone. And when she says you can stand between them, what I saw online was an arch doorway and these huge statues on either side of it. And the faces are that I would call it Babylonian look with the long sort of rectangular beards.
Yeah.
I don't know where the name Lamassu comes from, but it's worth looking online to see these huge stone statues.
Yes, you can just Google Lamassu and see how they look. But it is from mythology, this mythological creature, as Rhonda described, with the body of a bull, with the wings of an eagle, and with the head of a human. And we've come across creatures from mythology before in a previous articles. We've mentioned like the Sphinx, which is from Egypt, that is a lion with a human head. And it's often, well, where the most famous Sphinx is, put at the entrance or at the front of one of the pyramids. But all of these mythological creatures, the purpose of them is to protect, to be a guardian of whatever is inside that building, and they're usually placed at the entrance or the front of the building. In Chinese culture, there's also these kinds of statues or sculptures that are also placed at the front or the entrance of a building as protectors.
Well, since you mentioned protection at the museum, are we going to talk about what happens in the next paragraph?
Yes.
I think what you said is a great introduction to what happened to the crown jewels that we're going to read about.
Yes. So we hop on over to the Denon wing and we check out the French crown jewels. This is in the Gallery d'Apollon, or the Apollo Gallery. And Apollo is the god of the sun, Eric, and from mythology.
And did you know that one of the kings, Louis the 14th, was called the sun god?
Yeah. Well, yes, many kings, many rulers, they associate themselves with the sun because the sun is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it has all of these godlike qualities. So yes. So in the Apollo Gallery houses the crown jewels, the French crown jewels. And what are crown jewels?
Well, we can use that phrase with a small c and a small j for any jewels, swords, valuable possessions worn by a king or a queen for their official ceremonies. Mm-hmm. So the crown jewels are the most precious jewels.
Yes, worn by the royal family.
Yes, worn
by royalty. So they are very valuable. Mm-hmm. And it's where you will see the glistening crown of Louis the 15th. Glistening is something that is shining, it reflects the light, and jewels would do that. So it's covered in diamonds, rubies, emeralds, sapphires, all of these precious stones that are worth a lot of money.
Probably very heavy to wear, but these kings, as we say in English, they had big heads. In other words, they were very proud. If you have a big head, you're very proud. But I don't think these crowns would be very comfortable to wear, so they wore them for official ceremonies.
Right. They didn't wear them day-to-day life because that would just be too heavy, too cumbersome to wear, but for official ceremonies, yes. And so, what Rhonda was referring to before is that there was a heist, there was a robbery at the Louvre from the Apollo Gallery of the crown jewels.
Just a few months ago.
Well, in October of 2025.
Yes,
just last year. And 9 items were taken. And these were very valuable items. Like we said, these are the crown jewels that were worn by royalty. One of the items taken was something from Napoleon that was worn by Napoleon's second wife.
Oh, my.
And yeah, you probably heard the news of it when it broke, but it was pretty amazing. It was like a movie.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm laughing. Of course, this is serious, but I was laughing when you were talking about these bulls that would protect the royal things. There's no protection against a clever thief, I guess, in this case.
Yeah, and they were well planned, their strategy was well planned. They got in and out of there in 8 minutes, and they took off on motorcycles. It was like a scene from Ocean's 11, mm-hmm. the Ocean's series.
Well, and we use that English phrase, in broad daylight,
mm-hmm.
when we're talking about something that happens when everybody could see in daylight. But we say, in broad daylight, they stole the crown jewels.
That's what makes it like so unbelievable. It was during museum hours, and it could happen because there was construction and they used that, you know, one of the ladders that went up to the Apollo Gallery to get in through the window and then, make their quick getaway, like snatch the items and go. But yeah, it's pretty unbelievable.
And it's interesting too, because in that gallery are these famous paintings high up and even the ceiling of Greek mythology, Apollo. So again, the human robbery took place, even though there were these pictures of, mythological divine beings that obviously didn't have any power to stop the thieves. But there are 11 paintings in that gallery that tell an old myth, tell the story of the sun and Apollo. Now, Apollo was the Greek, quote, god of the sun. And as I understand, in the myths, he drove a chariot, mm-hmm. and he carried the sun across the sky. So the paintings would show this story.
Yes, and they decorate the entire gallery. And they're done by 9 French artists, most famous including Delacroix and Charles-Louis Muller. So the crown jewel, can't say crown jewel because it's not actually a jewel, but the most famous piece probably in the Louvre is the Mona Lisa. But our author give the caveat, if you can stand the crowds, then try to see the Mona Lisa.
If you can handle them or put up with them, yes.
Who now has her own room, before she didn't, right? And you can go see that, but as long as you're willing to stand in the crowd and wait to see her. Right. Well, let us hear about our next museum. We could talk forever. We could talk all day about the Louvre, and I could spend days in there just looking at all the art because there's so much.
I know.
But there's much more to talk about. So let's hear our second reading now.
Musée d'Orsay, Orsay Museum. Musée d'Orsay is housed in a former railway station built for the Universal Exhibition of 1900. Take an elevator straight to the top and see the giant clock, which was designed for the train station. Gaze through the frame and see the city framed in various ways. Then pose for a selfie with it. Musée d'Orsay boasts incredible 19th century paintings, such as Edouard Manet's controversial nude Olympia, Auguste Clésanger's famous marble sculpture Woman Bitten by a Serpent, countless Van Goghs, many works by Henri Toulouse-Lautrec and other artists of the Moulin Rouge era, as well as special exhibitions.
We are at the Orsay Museum, which is also along the Seine River in Paris. And it is housed in a former railway station built for the Universal Exhibition of 1900. And so this railway station had a giant clock that was built in it. And how do you get to this giant clock, Rhonda?
You take an elevator straight to the top.
And what can you see through it?
Well, the clock is, of course, there because it's a train station. You want to know what time your train's coming. You gaze through the frame. So you look out this beautiful window and see the city in various ways. The word frame is used two ways there. You gaze out the noun frame and see the city framed. It's a beautiful view, and the clock is sort of, well, you can see a picture of it there. It's beautiful, and you can pose for a selfie with it, which sounds kind of funny. Here's this, you know, modern device with your cell phone. You can take your own picture with this really wonderful clock from over 100 years ago.
Yeah, and there is a cool picture in our magazine. If you are looking at the magazine, we have people who are posed in front or, well, behind the clock because the clock is facing towards the outside. And, yeah, it's just a beautiful view of the city. And that's one feature of this museum. There's also so much more. The Orsay Museum boasts incredible 19th century paintings, such as Manet's controversial nude Olympia. And do you know why this was controversial?
I wanted to find out. I looked that up. It's controversial not only because it's a naked woman, because there are many ancient works of art of naked goddesses.
Painting nudes.
But this is apparently was considered by the onlookers that he was painting a prostitute, not a goddess, not an ideal image of a woman. So what I read, she's kind of pale. She's staring at the viewer in kind of a—
Very direct.
Direct way. So it's a portrayal of a woman who's maybe being exploited. She's a prostitute. What did you find out about it, Linda?
Well, she's, a prostitute courtesan.
Okay, yes.
Same meaning, but a different term that we can use. It's different from previous depictions of nudes because it's not idealized. Like, normally, like, they were in the style of Greek goddesses, right? So very idealized and mythological. But here, it's very realistic because it's posing someone in modern-day life. And that's indicated by the representations in the modern items that you wouldn't find in antiquity or in examples of other nudes that came before. So you have this maid there and this cat there. So these are signs of modernity. And her gaze, that is something that made it very controversial. She's looking directly at the viewer. She's not looking away. She's not posing in a way that's idealized, but she's on the bed, looking directly at the viewer. And Paris, this was a time, or this particular era, it's referred to as the Moulin Rouge era. This is the late 19th century, and the Moulin Rouge was a cabaret. So cabaret is a theatrical venue where you can see performances. And this particular one, it's famous. In French, it means the red windmill. It's famous because it was the origin of the can-can, the dance, that the French dance, like from this time period.
Well, then this also is an era in French history, similar to what other Western nations, right before World War I. So a time of celebration before the world was about to be turned upside down and destroyed by war. So you've got, it was also called the Belle Époque. The beautiful era.
Right. So the late 19th century, where there's advancements in art, in science, industry. So it was a very prolific time. And yeah, these artists were creating all this art that caused controversy sometimes because they were free thinkers. They were thinking outside the box. And Van Gogh is mentioned here. We see a work in our magazine that's in the Siesta by Van Gogh. That's in the Orsay Museum. But there are tons of other works, Toulouse-Lautrec and other artists of this time period that you can see in the Orsay Museum. But unfortunately, we have run out of time today. But please come back tomorrow because we'll be going to two other museums and we'll also be able to add on more to today's discussion. So for now, I'm Linda.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.